Would you be willing to share memories of Ajahn Chah? Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's always nice to have an Ajahn Chah story. But, I think, well, maybe one of the things is before I ever met Ajahn Chah, the monastery that I was at was a city monastery. And I was there as a layperson, and then I took what I thought was a temporary ordination, just to give it a try. And there were some handwritten notes of somebody who'd been to Wat Bapong, to Ajahn Chah's monastery, and one of them was a story of Ajahn Chah, a teaching that somebody gave, and they came where they and the person was, probably somebody was educated or had some fair bit of knowledge of Buddhism, and you get these things sometimes with say as a teacher, where people are come to sort of test your knowledge. And somebody came and asked Ajahn Chah, what is the essential teaching in Buddhism? What is the core essence of the Buddhist teachings? And Ajahn Chah sort of looked at the guy, and then he picked up, say something like this, because. Is this a big stick or a little stick? And the person is, or he's, testing, he's wanting philosophy, and then he's this Ajahn Chah's asking about this stick, and he said, "I don't understand." He said, "Well, if you wanted to build a house, you'd call this a little stick, and if you wanted to clean your teeth, pick your teeth after the meal, you call this a big stick." See, what you call something and how you conceive of things is completely dependent on desire. That's the essence of the Buddhist teachings, is desire is the cause of suffering. And so it's just an illustration that made it very real. But it was definitely on the mark. And also something that comes to mind for me, say personally, because I did have the good fortune to live and train with him for quite a few years, and then I lived quite close to him as he was getting sick and then was sick, bedridden, unable to speak. So it was very much a part of the crew helping out. So I had a long association with Ajahn Chah. But one time, say as a youngish monk, I was a few years, I'd been a monk for a few years, so my languages was getting better, and then a city monk who I had met before, and in my opinion was insufferable. And then he came with another Westerner who was, I think he was maybe, I think he was Swedish, a journalist. And I had, and then the monk was sort of asking the questions for the journalist. And I'd had a couple interactions before this all took place, like in Bangkok. And I found him irritating, and I was not very skillful in my covering that up at all. And so I was, in my mind, I was kind of quite dismissive of the person, which is not a beautiful mind state. So we, anyway, after the meal, we went and sat with Ajahn Chah, he and the journalist had his question. He explained that he was working for a magazine that was kind of like a spiritual magazine, and he was going around to these different teachers, Buddhist, Hindu, Christian, if you can find them, and then asking them three questions. And it was, what was it? How do you practice? Oh no. Why do you practice? How do you practice? What is the result of practice? And so that why do you practice is the was the first. Why do you practice? Why do you engage in any religious activity, religious training, spiritual training? So he asked the question, and again, the context is me having a lot of views and opinions about this person, which has then seeped into the journalist, and so and I was sort of, kind of dismissive, and so then I translated for Ajahn Chah, like, why do you practice? How do you practice? What results do you get from the practice? And then Ajahn Chah sort of talked about this, talked about that, asked some questions from the person, and so I'm translating back and forth. And then it was, and then he was, huh, what were those questions? So then I had to repeat, so I had to go over the questions again. And I said, why do you practice? How do you practice? Okay. And then he goes off on another tangent. And he chats about this and chats about that. And he goes, and he said, Pastor, what were those questions again? So then I have to go through it again. And again, he sort of just talking about something completely different. And the other people are getting a bit irritated, and I'm understand Lumpon is putting the screws on me. And then he comes back. And again, what was this question? And he said, call the novice over. Get a piece of paper for me. Okay, what was that first one? Okay, why do you practice? How do you? So then he gets it written, nicely written down. And he looks up at it's actually at the monk who was doing the talking for the journalist, and saying in Thai, he said, "Kin khao tamai." And said, "Why do you eat?" And then he was, and then the person was kind of flummoxed. And said, "I don't know, why do you eat?" And then Lumpa went, "You eat because you're hungry, and In the same way, the heart is hungry for some kind of understanding, some kind of clarity. And when you really understand and recognize that hunger for something that's true, that's good, that's peaceful, that's clean and clear, then you'll find a way to practice. You'll look, and then for the result that you get from the practice is in the same way that when you eat, you're full. You're full. You feel better. You feel good. So that's the same. That's why we practice in these spiritual teachings and these religious teachings, is in order to one is to give some ease from that hunger, but also to feel comfortable, to feel at ease. So that was Ajahn. But it was, so much of he could be such a drama. he was a great actor. so it was really, it's very memorable. It was burned into my memory. And the same, he'd do different things too. because he wasn't really fixed. And he didn't really, and again, this is where the beauty of non-self really shows through, is you don't have to carry a persona. Like he could kind of be the forgetful old monk and not be at all sort of embarrassed it was useful to do that, to be that role, and it highlighted the teaching that he was giving. But he was also, oftentimes when we tell these stories, it's kind of his ebullient personality that sort of shines through. But really, I think one of the main reasons why I stayed with him and lived with him and was inspired by him was the tremendous sense of, firmness or unshakability that he exuded, and it's actually I came across was in the letters Kathy's been working on some of the transcription, but whatever I sent home to my family, as I sent all sorts of things, as pictures and whatnot, but all the letters, my mom kept them all, unbeknownst to me. I had no idea that she'd kept them all. And last year, she asked if I wanted them. And I was there's some people in working on a biography of mine. So, well, that would probably be useful for a biography. There might be some good information. I have no idea what I wrote to my family. and one of the letters was, I'd probably been at Wat Pa Pong and Wat Nana Chat maybe for about a year. So that was my second year of being a monk, maybe for about a year. And I'm describing to my family and my mom and my parents what life is like there. It's quite a long letter. But then also because when I very first ordained, I mentioned it was a temporary ordination, I figured maybe 3 months, four tops. Surely I can figure this out in that long. But my time is extending, and I'm staying on. And I'm writing to my parents and sort of saying, describing the community, but really the main reason is because of Ajahn Chah. As a teacher, as a person, as a human being, there's something about him that is compelling, and he is peaceful and solid and clear and unshakable in the midst of all that's going around him. And I would like to be somewhat like something like that. So it's Ajahn Chah's inspiration. So, okay, I could go on and on.